Should we be pilots?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
If you hit a 30-minute delay at the airport, it's literally faster to drive to Charlotte at this point.
What are the requirements to be a commercial pilot?
It can't
be
that
badass.
Bad. You can also, I mean...
Wear a cool hat.
Okay. I only know this because of the 9/11 Saskatchewan musical, but you can get that. No, okay. That Ryan, you know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Not
no, Saskatchewan.
No. Yes.
Nova Scotia.
Come from away. I've seen it.
Thank you. Fuck.
Wow.
I've seen it.
My mother made me see it. I got to say, it's better than I thought it was
going to
be.
It's not bad. When considering you're going to a musical about 9/11, it's not bad.
It's not bad. But that lady, the lady pilot who sings the one good song in the whole show, her first job in real life was flying a single engine plane for a mortician. Like, she would fly dead bodies.
Hell yes.
Nice.
Like people who died away from home. So that's got to be a pretty easy job, right? Just like you in a coffin in a plane.
Fly the deadly skies.
We could probably do that.
Let's do it.
What if we just started a morgue?
So I a flying morgue?
Full casket.
A casket Branding wants to be full.
It craves the dead. Feed it.
A casket without a body is just a box.
I know that casket's eating good.
That's a Tim Couch sized casket right there. Look
what?
At it.
It's what? It's illiterate?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's the Lea Michele casket.
Dude, and her opening night is tonight. This is too much gossip.
You can't, by the way.
There's too much happening today.
You can't get that woman hesitating
for a second
camera to read a cue
card. Do you guys know, this is very specific. Spencer knows because I told him this. Do you guys know the origin of Lea Michele Can't Read? It is basically the Broadway podcast equivalent of the full cast. This is a meme from a Broadway podcast that broke contain. Like, it was a complete throwaway joke. There was a... It was Naya Rivera's memoir had a beat in it about how Lea Michele like really hated improvising. And one of the hosts just as a toss off was like, well, yeah, that's probably because she can't read. Like, it's like something Ryan would say. And it just completely caught fire. And now like she has to address it in a public statement.
Oh,
but it's exactly the kind of it would be like. This is the Broadway equivalent of if Craig James had to address, no, I did not kill sex workers. Way back when, like, if Craig James had ever been forced to make that public statement, this is what has happened to Lea Michele, which is very funny because she's a monster.
I can't really, like, every time she is, like, on the timeline, there's somebody who finds a clip of her at an award show where there is a card and she is presenting the award and she does what everyone does when you open a card and you haven't prepared for your award show spot. You wait a beat to see who's going to read it or if you're going to read
it
together.
Right.
No.
But now it's all you
can see.
That
gets on there and they're like, she can't read. Look. She waited a second. She's illiterate.
And then she's like, and then her statement was like, her statement does nothing to refute it. It was, I was at Glee every day. I knew my lines this wouldn't happen if I were a man. And I was like, bitch, if you had harassed people on set the way that you did and were a man at the same time, you would be under a jail somewhere.
It's a shame that Desus and Mary broke up because they would have definitely had her on the show and handed her something and be like, read this out loud.
And had handed her like cars and trucks and things that go.
What do you want your rainbow to say?
I don't
write
know.
It down. Write it down.
I feel very bad for somebody who's illiterate unless they're Lea Michele or Floyd Mayweather. That's everyone deserves the gift of knowledge except for those two people.
Yeah.
It's lost on them.
Oh, Donald Trump has to be literate. Why do you keep all those documents?
Because he didn't know they were classified.
yeah, what?
That's true.
This is his best legal defense.
This paper is red. It must be mine.
To the Shutdown Full Cast. You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I am Spencer Hall. Joining me this week. After week one of college football and on the verge of week two is Ryan Nanny, live from the number one team in the nation, Vanderbilt Commodores, home of Nashville, Tennessee. Ryan, how are you showing your gold? Are you feeling the doors?
Goddamn, I'm getting my biscuits and showing my gold.
Playoff picks, baby.
Get you a biscuit, Ryan.
God damn it, Spencer.
I have one Vanderbilt-related thing I would like to share.
Okay.
My oldest child started kindergarten this year and goes to a school pretty close to Vanderbilt. So the athletics department does a bunch of shit with the school. Like, they had women's basketball players there on the first day to, like, help with, you know, welcoming kids to school, whatever. It's all very nice. But one of the things they're doing is a reading drive where if your child reads 20 minutes nine times, so 3 hours total, and you attest to all of this, your child can then get two tickets to the Vandy Florida game. I'm just like, what is, guys? Oh,
if your child only reads 10 minutes a day, they get four tickets to the Vandy Florida game.
They can sell those tickets for like $7. That's enough to buy a personal pan pizza. So book it is back.
We should just offer. We should offer to buy those from the school children.
Yeah.
We should say, listen, we will take those on second market. What much of a price? I mean, we got to take our cut. So kids, you know, don't try to stiff us. Don't try to like short us.
Hey, if you're in the Atlanta area, by the way, Junior's Pizza in Summerhill is doing their own Book It program. And you should go check them out because they're fine people who make fine pizza. This is not a paid ad. I just noticed that they had launched their own Book It program this year.
We just like juniors.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, atmosphere here, electric. It's Vandy mm-hmm. City through and through. Everybody's just, you know, book your tickets now to the national championship, wherever it is. Cause...
Ryan, are you worried this is going to be confusing for your child who thought the Nashville City flag was the orange one with the T on it?
It's good to be confused early on about college football, I think. Yeah. So I think it's a healthy development.
How do you talk to your child about an undefeated Vanderbilt?
I think the thing is the Vanderbilt flag is more of a national thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not,
that makes sense.
Not,
they are a military force.
It's not just one city
force.
Or one state.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to also welcome in the voice you just heard. That would be Jason Kirk. Jason, I haven't asked about how your Kennesaw State Owls are doing.
I don't know. I haven't looked it up. They played a game. Let's find out right now.
Let's find out
Once
right
again,
now.
Jason has a healthier relationship to college football than all
Very
of us.
Yes.
Committed. We lost to Samford. I'm sure we'll beat Cincinnati, though, so that'll turn out just fine. My team this year is Iowa. My team last year was Nebraska, so I'm just counting the days till Black Friday when they meet and the most disgusting thing of the year happens.
You're going to go, right? I assume you're going to go.
You know, that's sounding better by the minute.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this reminds me. If you missed Full Cast After Dark on Saturday night, it is now publishing in two different places. It is in its own feed, Full Cast After Dark. It is also, apparently, as we learned yesterday, publishing in the regular Full Cast feed. So that's the same episode if you see it, but there's two different places to grab that now. For those of you who complained that pushing a different button to subscribe was hard, we
can we
it.
Also get it to the New York Times, the daily feed? Jane, help us out with this.
There's got to be at least one Vox Media feed it still populates somehow. Like, it's probably surely still fired up on a fucking
Hey, they're still
Revenge
advertising
the
it seems smart. So.
Tab somehow.
There's somebody who's like, you know what I need are moderate opinions about lukewarm topics.
Well, after
and
a
we
couple
pop
of weeks,
up.
they're also pretty short on college football content after the events of the past couple weeks, so I've heard. So
I would like a tuna melt that's been left in a car.
Yeah, the audio equivalent of that.
What
Put
time of year,
ears.
Ryan? Food it might be 40 degrees outside, idiot.
Food poisoning. Explain.
40 degrees is food poisoning. Never mind. It might be 20 degrees outside, idiot. Frozen tuna melt.
Not Celsius.
40 degrees Celsius, yeah, baby. Come on.
That's like a that's burnt, right? If the tuna melt is on fire.
Yep.
I don't know.
Sorry, Dabo. The only lord we worship is Kelvin.
Please.
Celsius is fucked up. It'd be like, oh my god, it's so hot. It's 30 degrees. You know.
Yeah, I don't know how those people hot. Live with themselves.
Kelvin is a very backup quarterback that everybody at Clemson is like, why isn't he playing? Name. Like Kelvin is Lord. Is perfect for that.
Kelvin, listen, I can't
Kelvin
tell you
Lord.
Right,
that's
I can't
name.
Tell you right now that Kelvin Lord wasn't an Oklahoma State option quarterback, right? I really can't. Like, you could be like, yeah, he played for 2 years and he ran for 600 yards at, you know.
He was 6'6", 104 pounds, and he was 48 years old.
The thing that I'm really going to miss about the dissolution of the Big 12 is the spreading across the country of the Big 12 names, which are such an underrated and unique concept. Like, I'm going to say one thing about Tennessee football. I feel better having a kicker named Paxton. That's some big that sounds like Big 12, and that sounds like points to me.
That's why Paxton Lynch didn't pan out in the NFL. Wrong.
Yeah,
position.
He was launching his body. He was launching the ball from the wrong limbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel way better if we have somebody named Jackson
with at least two X's.
There's got to be X's, right? Like, I need you.
Is that a Mortal Kombat inspired thing?
God, I hope so. I hope so many people. I hope. You know, I played Mortal Kombat, and I thought, what an entertaining button masher.
Other Luke Kang, get off that swing set.
Other people played it and thought, I want to know more about this universe and its personalities. Mm-hmm. Something I never thought. Like, the idea of, hey, there's an entire series of actual souls and personalities in this story, and I want to know more. I'm like, wow. And you named your kids after them.
Yeah, Shang Tsung Shipley out of Westlake.
Imagine a fucking LSU defensive tackle named Goro Babinet.
Gore E A U X.
Gore.
Gore, or is it G E A U X R E A U X? Go row.
G apostrophe R E A U X.
So then you can do the Ted Lasso thing. It's pronounced Goro. Mm-hmm.
Just his parents at some like clinic this. In Kenner going, listen. Can you get another pair of arms real cheap on the black market? I got a big cooler you can keep him in.
Ain't no law
against him. On him. That's a first rounder. You ever seen a defensive tackle with four arms? Man, scouts can be all over that.
What's the wingspan on the young man? Which
well,
pair
you,
of wings?
Do you add the two wingspans together?
I think
you'd have to, yeah.
Mike Mayock just losing his goddamn mind.
We've sewn two asses onto this defensive tackle. Oh, my God!
He's got so double the motor!
It's got double bubble. So many bubbles on Goro Babineau.
Two stomachs and five asses? First round!
Ah, shit, we built a cow.
Yeah.
I saw a beast ascending out of the sea with a bubble butt the size of Houston.
You've just invented the Pontiac Aztec. Shit.
Just Mike Mayock driving through Gaffney, South Carolina, going, oh.
Now that's a bubble.
Oh. Please stop making that noise.
What, horny Mike Mayock is a problem? That's a problem for everyone.
It turns out I don't like it.
Yeah. I got to be honest. I'm revolted while doing it. Compelled,
I thought it was football
revolted.
Season.
Yeah.
Y'all said you're ready for some football.
Can't spell revolted without V-O-L.
That's why they ask you, are you ready first?
You might not be.
Ah.
It's like a vampire.
The Utah Saints gave
in.
Us several measures to determine.
I am not. I am not yet ready for some football.
If
please,
I ever,
please stick with baseball. It's all I can handle right now.
I swear to God, if I ever meet him or I work in a professional capacity with Mike Mayock, I will keep a peach with me and eat it suggestively in front of him.
Oh, man, that's going to get a lot of juices in your beard.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
I'm
gonna,
sorry I said juice. I upset myself just by saying juices.
He's going to have to excuse himself from the room. He'll be so distracted.
Oh, why is my mouth watering?
He's going to go leave the room, bring in a table, and bang the table.
That's
now I'm picturing Mike Mayock as a magician, just like pulling props out of his jacket that he can make theatrical booth noises with. Like, just, like, pulling a gavel out of a tiny little handkerchief pocket, like a clown scarf.
Mm-hmm. We never saw Mike Mayock's emails. I bet they're just all that scene.
They're still taunt. The day's young.
They're just all from that scene from Law & Order where, you know, it's like, hey, we found 24 gigs of women's butts on this phone.
No, athlete
Except
butts.
It wouldn't be women's it's butts. It'd just be
closed
like
athlete feet. Butts, and you yes. can't tell which gender. Just athlete butts.
Folks, if you can access Mike Mayock's Dropbox, please email us at 38Godfrey. Anonymity guaranteed.
What's this hard drive that just says Combine Cake? What is that?
That's
Indianapolis.
I really...
Okay.
Connor, make the shirt. Connor, make the shirt.
We wanted to, before we did anything else today, have a moment of cultural exchange because the full cast supports the arts in all of their forms, football just being one of them. We're aesthetes is what we're saying. Connoisseurs of fine culture across the board.
This is going to be a really good episode for people who are like, I want to recommend the full cast to a friend who's never listened to it before.
It's the start of college football season.
Mm-hmm. Surely they'll talk about that.
We did. Surely we'll talk about Brian Kelly struggling. No, we have the entire rest of the season to do that. We're going to do that. That's happening. I guarantee you. I'm not going to miss an opportunity. They're like, why would you laugh at a man and his misfortune? I'll be like, have you met Brian Kelly?
That's what Brian Kelly would do.
Let's go ahead and start with, I want to say with the Ryan and Holly side of this, because Jason and I have one thing to discuss. Ryan and Holly have another cultural item to discuss. And
we promised.
We're going to learn today. We're going to teach each other things that we did not know before.
Yeah, we promised this in jest on the timeline this morning, and it turns out a number of you actually want to hear about this. The thing about the drama surrounding Olivia Wilde's directorial debut, Don't Worry, Darling, at the Venice Film Festival is that I found out about the drama from Ryan and Bunky Perkins before I found out about it from either my group text or from film Twitter.
So it's not her debut, right? Because Booksmart was her debut, wasn't it?
See, I'm learning already because yeah. I forgot about that.
Yes, yes. So
despite
Booksmart,
having seen Booksmart.
Booksmart was very well received and I think it is a big reason why this movie has generated a lot of attention leading up to it.
Right.
Right?
Well, and also because there was... just to set the background, Olivia Wilde and Jason Sudeikis are getting divorced. And the reason this was in our particular zeitgeist is because of the Ted Lasso of it all. And also, we were thinking Olivia Wilde was being just a skosh bit silly because she got served with some form of legal papers pertaining to the divorce at a different film festival and called it an attack to be served at her workplace, as though this is not exactly what process servers do and this is not the point of having a process server. She acted like her ex came up there and threw these papers at her on stage at a film festival. No, babe, is she the only person in the Hollywood who's never been on Law and Order? This is kind of how it works. So she had a fine debut, but listen, going into this, I just want to set everybody's baseline. Olivia Wilde being a little bit silly about her divorce. Her boyfriend for whom she left Jason Sudeikis is Harry Styles. Yes, that Harry Styles. He is in this next movie. Okay, so Ryan, that is all the information you need heading into last night.
Okay, so this movie is getting ready to, it already has by the time we're recording this and you've listened to it, it has premiered at the Venice Film Festival. Leading up to it, there is a lot of stress and a lot of drama. Florence Pugh is the star of this film.
Florence Pugh of Midsommar and Black Widow. If you're wondering where you've heard that name. And Fighting With My Family.
Florence Pugh,
which we'll come back to wrestling in a minute.
She has basically decided, like, she's done doing promotional work for this film.
Do you want to talk about why?
So, I think the simplest way to put it is that she's pissed at Olivia Wilde. And right. There are a variety of reasons why that may or may not be the case. Some of it has to do with the fact that Shia LaBeouf was originally supposed to be playing opposite her. That's the role Harry Styles stepped into after Shia LaBeouf was kicked off the project.
There's ancillary drama there.
Yes,
because. Yes. Olivia claimed that she, at one point, claimed that she fired Shia because Shia's got a whole bunch of abuse allegations hanging around him going way back. But then a video leaked of her begging Shia to stay on the project and calling it, quote, a wake-up call for Miss Flo.
Yeah.
Which I think is where Twitter started to pick up on it.
Yes, correct. But that has almost nothing to do with what happened in Venice.
No, it's just curtains. It's just the curtains surrounding what happened last night.
So
Venice, I'm told, by the way, the St. Yeah. Petersburg, Florida of northeastern Italy. Is that?
Yes.
The yeah, smell is remarkably similar.
Okay. Let's go with that.
I'm not familiar.
So Chris Pine is also in this film. And Chris Pine, before last night's premiere, has just an amazing set of photographs from various other press they've been doing in Venice leading up to this. He looks high in all of them, but that sort of like disassociated high where he's sort of just like staring off into space. Mm-hmm. And he's also having to do a lot of interviews with Harry Styles. Harry Styles is not an actor.
No.
This is his first film project, and he's the lead opposite Florence Pugh, who's a very talented actor.
And you need to know a couple of things about Chris Pine. Chris Pine basically started out as a grip in the film industry. Like, he has worked the craft services table. He has worked his way up through the film industry since he was a young man. He has a degree in English from Berkeley. Like, Chris Pine is real pretty. He's not stupid.
He is a craftsman.
Right. And he is also legendarily one of the, like, nicest and steadiest and did a full press tour for both the Wrinkle in Time movies and Horrible Bosses 2 with a smile on his face. So yes. It's not like he's not used to this either.
So Chris Pine has to sit next to Harry Styles while Harry Styles says things like, "What I love about acting is that I have no idea what I'm doing."
There's a clip of Chris Pine.
I say that about surgery all the time.
There's a clip of the camera that pans to Chris Pine right as Harry Styles says this, and you can actually watch him dissociating in real time.
Yes, he's trying to leave his body as quickly as possible.
The tweet that I saw said you can see the screams trying to claw his way out of his throat.
Okay, so that's all the preface.
Right.
Holly, do you want to discuss the incident?
Which incident?
So I'm talking about the spitting.
Okay. The spitting to me is almost second. Go ahead and do the spitting, because the spitting to me is almost secondary to the other thing that happens.
By the way, I'm just going to say.
The spitting, by the way, is where this crosses over into college football Twitter, because all of this starts unfolding as we're watching Clemson, Georgia Tech. And my first awareness of this is seeing Bunky Perkins tweet in all caps, "Whip his ass, Chris Pine." And I was like, Chris Pine is in the Georgia Dome?
The king of Tulsa was the one who broke the deuce.
Yeah. Okay, so Ryan, you do the spitting, and then I will take over for the Florence of it all.
Okay, so... So Olivia Wilde, here's the scene. Olivia Wilde and Chris Pine are already seated in the theater as they, I think, are introducing the various members of the cast as they go to their seats. And they've already done these two. And they introduce Harry Styles. For context, Harry Styles is wearing like the most comically large collar you've ever seen on a shirt.
He looks like a small child who was dressing as Prince for Halloween.
Yes. One side of the collar is tucked into, I think he's wearing a vest. One side is not. It looks insane. But he's been wearing this the whole time. It's not like a new outfit. And as he goes to take his seat next to Chris Pine, who's sort of just like applauding politely, not particularly notable one direction or the other, Harry Styles appears to spit on Chris Pine. And Chris Pine reacts in such a way where he pauses, he stops clapping, he looks down onto like his shirt or arm as if I just got spit on. And he sort of just like smiles, but it's that smile that sort of just like, I know I can't do anything right now. I know that professionalism and the event we are at right now requires me to be cool. And Harry Styles takes a seat and doesn't really make eye contact with Chris Pine, just sort of like looks at Olivia Wilde and gives her like a weird, silly nod. And now everyone's just like, did Harry Styles just fucking spit on Chris Pine? And
Chris Pine, by the way, proceeds to put his sunglasses on for the movie and hopefully take a nice nap.
Yes.
And then after the credits roll, Florence Pugh, who we'll come back to in a second, I think walks out during the applause of the movie, and Harry Styles, who I am not going to get into the whole discussion of Harry Styles and queer baiting. That is left to the, I'm going to leave that to
more
to
capable.
The community that it originated from. Mm-hmm. But grabbing Nick Kroll by the face and kissing him on the mouth is probably not going to make that discussion go away.
I would defend him on one route. He really should be kissed on the mouth.
Everyone should kiss Nick Kroll.
He should be kissed on the mouth repeatedly for the Philadelphia pawn shop skit.
Pawnsylvania?
The Pawnsylvania skit. Yeah, he should. That is one of the finest things produced in like the last 20 years. I would totally give him tongue for that.
Yeah. To a large extent, I would agree with those who think that Harry Styles' exploration of gender roles and fashion has felt weirdly capitalistic. But you know, he's got a body and he looks pretty on the cover of Vogue. Sure. I think he should probably stay there and not try acting
anymore. And like pop stars do this.
Yeah, pop stars do this. So anyway, this bit of video has been Zapruder to death. It's not super clear from the video whether or not Chris Pine has actually been spit on. But all of that takes a backseat for me to return to Florence, who after all this drama, after the Miss Flo video leaked, Olivia Wilde told the press that Florence Pugh was not going to be at the Venice premiere due to scheduling conflicts. Florence shows up 10 minutes into the press conference in purple Valentino shorty pajamas with an Aperol spritz in her hand and was like, I'm here. And meanwhile, her stylist is posting all these pictures of her outfits, all captioned Miss Flo. Mm-hmm. She shows up at the red carpet in, I think, another Valentino, this stunning walk-through black tulle with silver spangles. And this is the best part of this for me, and this is also where you can tell the lines in the cast are drawn. Chris Pine and Nick Kroll pull out disposable cameras and start taking fake paparazzi photos of her on the red carpet like they're her dad and she's going to prom, and it's the cutest fucking thing ever. And Gemma Chan is also appearing in this movie, by the way, and she's kind of standing with them, so I think if you're drawing lines, you put her with that group. But also, Gemma Chan is the most beautiful woman in the world, and also all she has to do is just like stand there to get noticed. So if she plays a part in this drama, we are not aware of it. She's just a very beautiful backdrop at this point. But for Florence to like just show up and swan in after they said she wasn't going to be there doing the scheduling context and steal the entire red carpet, that was a bigger win. That was a bigger win than anything I saw on a football field this weekend.
So
possible. Florence is the Anthony Richardson of this whole scenario, is what I'm trying to get at.
So I think the cherry on top of this entire Sunday, this movie is not good. All reports are that this movie is not very good.
But I will say my interest in it has spiked at this time, and not for good reasons.
like this, I don't think it's like this is a horribly bad film. But it's not, it's by no means like, oh wow, this is like a real feat, and you gotta see Harry Styles in this shit.
Mm-mm. Would the movie have been good if it had been Jason Sudeikis instead of Harry Styles?
I think it would have been better. Like, maybe, I have seen somebody, I think Luke Zimmerman tweeted about this. I think some reviews have, trying to be charitable, compared Harry Styles as an actor to like Elvis in his early acting days.
Oh no.
And it's like, that's not good.
Wait, are they comparing him to Elvis or are they comparing him to Austin Butler? Because both are bad, but one is worse.
No, I think it's Elvis. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's Elvis.
You have to understand, that is not the diss it could be, because they could be comparing him to Elvis in his later movies when he's like a good 20, 25 pounds heavier, kind of sweaty from all the pills, and clearly just reading off cue cards like, yeah, I would like to go to a clam bake. Oh. You know, like that's...
Rockahula Harry. Anyway, I'm excited for One Direction. Anyway, so of course, this invokes... I saw someone today, this morning. The first thing I saw about this morning was somebody saying it's exciting for white people to finally get their Solange in the elevator moment. And this is basically what that is.
This is, I would like to address one explanation that has been floated that I think is plainly false for the spitting specifically. Mm-hmm. The Florence shit, like, I think that's pretty clear at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard some people suggest that, like, well, maybe this is like a fun dudes rock thing that Chris Pine and Harry Styles do, like they spit on one another and it's like a fun goof. I've seen
like
several,
it's ball tapping?
I've seen several people float that maybe this is like an inside goof between the two of them. And I will grant you that men are very stupid, and the idea that there are two male friends out there who their joke is they spit on one another, 100% yes. 100% yes. But
I can spit in my mouth. It'll be fun.
Yes. That
you
exists.
Know.
That's called,
it's called
baby
a fraternity.
It's baby birding. Yeah.
But I think if that were the case, the representatives for Harry Styles would have come out and said that immediately. It has been a good, what, 14 hours since this happened? And they have, like, if that was the case, they would have come out and said so by now.
This is another thing that I saw pointed out. Like, for being such an immensely famous person, Harry Styles' PR reps seem weirdly unprepared and flat-footed for all of this.
Well, it's because, like, this press tour has shown us that, Harry Styles speaking extemporaneously is a very bad idea.
Bad for whom?
All of the clips are him just saying, like, it really felt like we were making a movie.
And
like,
they keep putting him next to Chris Pine, who is so clearly in hell. Matt Zollersites, who is one of the soberer film critics I know, said getting Chris Pine to turn on you is like having Elmo hate you.
What I love about this is that if you take everyone involved and look at them, I don't know, 6 months ago, like, by and large, yes, Olivia Wilde was, I guess, somewhat divisive. But I think, like, by, you know, I don't think she had, like, a terrible
We thought she was being a bit silly about the divorce. Like, divorce makes people do crazy things, but that was it.
But people liked Booksmart, and people were
like,
she made
Booksmart,
like,
she's good with me.
Right.
Yeah, she's fine, yeah.
Florence Pugh remains unassailable. And Harry Styles, I think, by and large, was, like, I don't think had really a negative impact on the cultural consciousness.
No, there's been a lot of discussion in various queer communities about about whether he is. Listen, you can read smarter people than me on this about the fashion choices he's making and what he's signaling and whether he is actually. You know, journeying through his gender identity or just saying, oh, look what this button does.
Right.
And you can read much smarter people than us on that. But yes, to your point is correct.
But even that had not approached, oh, Harry Styles is a dude who spits on people because he's mad at them.
I would like to audition for the lucrative role of being his PR person and state that this is a cultural issue.
You could carry him around like a backpack.
I could, yeah.
You don't understand. English people spit on each other as a sign of respect.
Yeah,
that's right. I want to make that argument, and then when I have an English person do it, I'll be like, "How am I more familiar with your culture than you? I think it's you who needs to do some work."
That's what One Direction meant. It's I hawk a loogie out of my mouth.
One Direction into the wind.
There's got to be somewhere in the world where people spit on each other as a sign of respect, and the British Museum means anywhere in the world is English culture.
Right? I mean, you used to spit on your handshake to seal a deal, right?
That's true. That's true.
That's right. I spit on you to seal the deal of friendship.
Yeah.
So
makes you think.
So yeah, just
so
this is
that...
this is what I was going to say. Sorry, lost there for a second. I don't want to have a big argument about like the Marvelification of movies and whether that's good or bad. Like all I want to say is this: I do think the Marvelification of the film industry has robbed us of more stories like this. Like Marvel movies are so like the closest you get to this is what's his name with the hat who was Rhodey in the first Iron Man and then wasn't anymore.
Right.
You refer to Terrence Howard as what's his name with the hat.
I believe you're referring to the esoteric mathematician.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I think you're
that's
a
right.
man with bold theories introducing new concepts that we're not ready for.
That's right. Yeah. Like that and maybe like the Edward Norton Hulk thing, both of which are very early in the MCU history.
Man, can you imagine if we'd had Twitter when Edward Norton was like telling John Hurt that he'd had better coffee when he was living in a favela in Brazil learning the craft?
Like, The Marvel movies...
You call this a quarry?
The Marvel movies are very good about, like, the stories coming out of these are going to be positive, and, like, we want everyone to believe that the Avengers are friends, and, like, there's no hint of, like, disagreement or discord or whatever, and that's what we need more of. We need more independent films where Harry Styles spits on somebody who's been working in acting for the last 35 years of his life.
Do you know what an angel you have to be to look like Chris Pine and still have everybody like you?
It's very dangerous, by the way, to develop parasocial friendships. We realize this, that these are not people we know. However, I want to state that I think I'm being pretty moderate when I say that I would die for Chris Pine because he almost died to secure the family ranch for his kids. right? And lost his brother in a shootout with the police in Western Texas. So I'm completely on his side.
Hell or High Water, the movie, is what you...
You know, if you feel like that's necessary to add, oh, sure.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I'm not going to tell you to believe anything other than what you want to believe.
I'm pretty sure I had seen almost all of this, but I never would have guessed this was all the same movie. I would have thought this is like seven movies that are none of my business.
Yep.
But
it's just one movie
that's none of my business.
It's just all one movie that I don't think most of us will go see.
That's impressive. It's typically bad when the publication of your movie has more plot than the movie. Yes. Like the making of, okay, then you do a documentary on it, like with Apocalypse Now. But like, the PR campaign shouldn't generate this much.
This is why I love the Michael Mann Miami Vice movie, because that it's not the same level as this. But like, man, everybody who talks about that movie now is like, that was a dark time for all of us.
When Jamie Foxx like left the set for 3 months or something,
and they rewrote the ending to the film. They had to change the entire third act because Jamie Foxx was like, I'm not going back.
It's dangerous. And it kind of was. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. If you read why Jamie Foxx left that movie.
Oh, there were legitimate safety concerns.
Like kidnappings.
Yeah.
Muggings in foreign cities.
And of course, Colin Farrell is just like, huh?
To give you an idea of where he
went. Colin
Farrell's like,
filming.
Are the kidnappers hot?
Colin Farrell like doesn't remember filming big chunks of this, right?
I don't think
No, he doesn't. He went into rehab right after.
Yeah.
He was.
I would like to say this. We're all friends here. Colin Farrell made the only celebrity sex tape worth watching.
I would like to give shouts to Michael Mann for being born in Chicago, going to Wisconsin and the London Film School for school, and then almost entirely thereafter, he's like, every film I do is set in L.A., Miami, like warm places only. I'm not doing any cold movies. Fuck you. The Thing sucked because it's cold.
That's right. Would you be interested in doing this movie we have about Stalingrad? No, Santa Claus. No,
I will give you humid Stalingrad.
Yeah,
we're gonna do hot Stalingrad.
The best movie is Weekend at Bernie's, but it needs more shootouts.
Scaldingrad.
He's not wrong about that.
I got nothing.
We're going to do the sexy Battle of the Bulge.
Hey, Wisconsin native, what's your most famous movie? Heat. It's called Heat.
In the NFL, there is no margin for error. One mistake can change the outcome of a game. Science proves quality sleep can help boost reaction time, recovery time, and overall athletic performance. As the official sleep wellness partner of the NFL, Sleep Number's mission is to provide players with data and insights to optimize their sleep for the ultimate competitive edge. Sleep is essential for recovery, and we all have unique needs. That's why Sleep Number smart beds are perfect for couples, with individualized settings for each side. Since 2018, Sleep Number and the NFL have teamed up to bring quality sleep to elite athletes. 8 out of 10 NFL players, including 80% of Kansas City Chiefs players, trust Sleep Number for their best rest. And now, during Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store for details.
So the only downside of spending the entire second half and all of today leading up to the recording of this show looking up drama from the Venice Film Festival and following the stylists of everyone involved on Instagram is that I only have the vaguest concept of what is happening in AEW. And I'm wondering if Jason and Spencer can get us caught up on that, because all I am aware of at the moment is that something has happened.
Can I ask a somewhat leading question heading into this? Is the story you're about to tell have anything to do with, is it Tony Khan or Tony Khan's son, who is very, very mad?
Yes, the Jaguars family is involved.
podcast.
Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So we have multiple football connections.
Okay,
the first being
okay.
that AEW does not exist without Shad Khan, who is the father of Tony Khan.
Bortles, the father of all elite wrestling.
All three of those sound like wrestle names.
It doesn't exist without the Khan bumper monopoly, I believe it is. There's some like
it's some car thing, yes.
It's some car part that every one of them is made by the owner of the Jaguars, and that's why he owns the Jaguars, and that's why there are two wrestling companies on national TV.
So naturally, you know, he heard there was another business that involved bumps and went right into it. Mm-hmm.
So, CM Punk, do y'all know who that is?
Yes.
The straight edge wrestler from Chicago
the MMA failure.
The hottest dad in recording.
The hot 0-2 MMA guy who looks more and more like Aaron Rodgers by the day.
Oh, man. I thought we liked him, though.
Oh, well, sometimes we like Aaron Rodgers. Sometimes
enough.
We don't, okay? And I think they're for very similar reasons, right? Extremely talented, super exciting. You listen every time they talk, for better or for worse. And gosh, they seem to burn a lot of bridges.
Yeah, the kind of people who have been given all of the talent in the world and none of the negotiating points. If you're creating the Aaron Rodgers / CM Punk archetype at home in your personal D&D game of life.
Sure, we all are.
Charisma, max. Negotiating skills, zero. No points allotted.
They feel like Baldwin brothers in some ways.
They really might be. I think the story has to begin about 10 years ago for two reasons. All right, this is wrestling, brother, long-term booking.
Yes.
Two reasons. One CM Punk had sort of a sidekick underling guy coming up in the indies named Colt Cabana,
who's a comedy wrestler.
He had one of the first big wrestling podcasts.
Yeah.
He's pretty full cast in a lot of ways. Like, he just did his own thing, and he made his own career out of he didn't work for WWE. He was never a big guy as an actual wrestler. He just sort of did his own merch and taught a lot of other indie wrestlers how to do it. He's like actually super influential, even though most people don't know who he is. They had a falling out that the public has only ever gotten Punk's side of the story, and the public has gotten a fuckload of Punk's side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
He has bitched about this guy for a full decade now. It's some financial thing. It's some money thing.
Like,
no one,
asking
like,
to
Punk
pay
was
them.
Allegedly supporting him, and no one knows. Until a couple days ago, we found out a bit more. Holly?
Quick question. When you say he has bitched about it for more than a decade, is this a within wrestling context, or is this like a outside of wrestling to the media context, or both?
The former, until it became the later. He's done it on like out of character podcasts and stuff like that. And for a while, you know, it was sort of like, wow, he must have a legit gripe. No one would air out a former friend like this.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. All right. And meanwhile,
a professional
about a decade
wrestler
ago,
with a vocal beef that doesn't make sense. No.
Yeah. And you don't know whether it's real or not. So around sort of the same time, Punk was becoming the biggest deal in WWE, feuding with Cena. There was, you know, he was angling for a WrestleMania main event spot. That's like his lifelong dream. He was the champ for a while. He had one of the biggest moments when he took the title belt out into the crowd at Chicago, a Chicago PPV, and quote fingers left. He had the most famous wrestling promo probably of the millennium, the pipe bomb promo, when he sat down crisscross at the top of the ramp and just aired out Vince McMahon.
He had
permission to do it because Vince McMahon likes money and attention, but he aired the show the fuck out.
Yeah, so maybe this may be a theme here, which is the shoot that is a work, the work that is a shoot, the line between, we do not know.
Okay, yes. that was my confusion.
Yeah. With Punk at all times, he's saying exactly what the fuck he means, and he's doing it, quote fingers, in character, which has become more and more fashionable for a lot of wrestlers. During his time in WWE, other wrestlers would do the same. Triple H, who is now in charge of WWE, told Punk, like, straight up, you present yourself as the voice of the voiceless. You think you're the hero of everyone. You're the lone truth teller. You're exactly like me. You're a scumbag who climbs over anyone to get ahead. Game recognized game, right? Punk leaves WWE very furious. He had some extremely legit gripes, some injury stuff. There was, like, very personal beef with Vince McMahon. Like, it got shitty and bad, and, like, he was right to leave, and he was right to talk his shit. At the same time, he's talking shit about, like, his former friend, Colt Cabana. So he's away for years and years and years. AEW starts up, and it's like wrestler operated, right? Like the it's not just
it's
the
a
Jaguar. The Jaguar kind of the Jaguars yeah. guy is pumping in the money, but you have Kenny Omega, who's like one of the greatest wrestlers ever, coming home from Japan to help start this thing. The Young Bucks, one of the biggest like yeah. indie tag team, coming home. Cody Rhodes, son of our guy Dusty Rhodes, leaving WWE and bouncing around the indies and helping start this thing. So like it's there's a lot of, and Hangman Page is the other.
And when you say wrestler operated, you mean like the creative decision making.
This for a long time.
They get
the plan was the plan was the Bucks run the tag team division while also being the biggest star tag team, which could be awkward, but they're the biggest star tag.
Because right? I'm not a huge wrestling person, but I feel like the biggest complaint people have had for WWE for the last, I don't know, 15 years is like, Vince controls all the writing and all of it sucks. Like, everyone hates all the storylines.
Oh,
Vince
yes.
towards,
yes.
Except
yes.
there's one, maybe it's Raw or something else, where it's like, he doesn't control that. That's the one everybody likes.
No. It was NXT, is relevant here, because that was the Wednesday night show. It was WWE's number 3 show. It was their minor league show.
And he, like, didn't fuck with that. Right.
He left it alone. It was Triple H's gig, and everyone was like, shh, don't tell Vince the show is awesome. And, like, a lot of the stars right now, like, Becky Lynch is the biggest women's star. Sasha Banks, they're Triple H trying to get her back. Like, the biggest stars in women's wrestling came from NXT.
Came up through there. Okay.
NXT, like, established women's wrestling as a thing, like, people were finally allowed to love, right? Like, it showed how awesome it had always been and just let it be itself. So Wednesday night is also when AEW decided to put its first its TV show, right? It's one big show. So its big show is going up against WWE's littlest show, and to the deep embarrassment of Vince McMahon, it starts beating WWE's minor league show. Triple H gets in trouble for this, gets more or less fired. They
gets
rid of all the NXT wrestlers who aren't megastars. Like, Vince just burns everything down. He's an insane person. It's great for the world. He has fewer responsibilities. Like, it's just legit. It's not just good for wrestling reasons, but it is good for the world when fewer people have to listen to that guy.
That is great.
For every imaginable reason. So AEW is gaining popularity, and it looks like the stable place to work, right? Like, before Vince leaves. Wrestlers jumping ship constantly, like big stars, Daniel Bryan, like huge, like legit stars and underappreciated guys like Cesaro are jumping from WWE to AEW. And then they pull their biggest coup of all. They bring CM Punk out of retirement after, for 7 years, crowds have been chanting for this guy. Crowds have voiced their displeasure with literally every wrestling thing by just chanting CM Punk's name. He shows up. Everyone probably saw it. It was the biggest moment in AEW history. Their rating was enormous that night. It was perfect. And he's like beaming and happy, which I had never seen in my life.
Never
he's
seen
like
that dude.
Thrilled
smile.
To be there, and he's putting over everyone. He's putting over their women's, putting over wrestling term for in speech, praising, making sound cool. And he's being like perfect coworker, and like he's gonna mentor, and he's gonna put over all the young guys and all this stuff. Everything's great and wonderful. So.
Little
hints of beef start trickling out, right? Like, there's a few guys who want more money, and there's like gripes about this and that. You know, whatever. It's show business, and they're all making a lot of money and moving a lot of merch, whatever. He was one of Punk's most recent feuds was with Hangman Page, who was AEW's like main character for like a
the
year.
Anxious millennial cowboy who
is this the one you said was my high school boyfriend?
Yes, he's okay. Well, no, that's several of them.
Dude.
Yeah. That's Darby Allin.
That is Darby Allin, right? The guy who's
Darby,
like, I'll kick
Darby
your,
Allin,
I'll kick
the
your
skinny
ass
goth boy who will jump off of anything.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
We all went to high school
who's
with several
who's
wrestlers.
Who's the disaffected
including
one who vaguely looks like Grant Brisby?
Orange Cassidy.
Oh, that, yes.
Thank Orange you Cassidy, for taking the guy less than a quarter of a second to answer that.
The guy who wrestles with his hands in his jeans.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Not like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Hangman Page is like he's this beloved guy. He'll throw back a beer, but not in a stone cold kind of way. Very like crowd friendly, and he's like encouraging and empathetic. And he's like he's kind of the nice guy among these scumbag friends,
yeah,
like the Young Bucks or these assholes. But
yeah, Jason, he went through a just to let everyone know, went through one of my favorite wrestling story arcs in recent history, which was an entire arc that centered on his lack of self esteem. And on wrestlers coming together and being very supportive and loving. It was a rare moment of deeply non-toxic masculinity where he finally did overcome and become a champion. It was both funny in the sense that it was very over the top, but at the same time, kind of heartrending because it was so genuine.
It was awesome. And you said a rare moment of non-toxic masculinity. Well, rare indeed.
Uh-huh.
Because so Hangman and Punk are feuding. That makes total sense. Two of the biggest names. And Hangman cuts a promo on Punk where he says, you know, you blah, blah, blah. You are not the guy you say you are. You say a lot about workers' rights, but then you do what you've been doing around here. No one really knows what it means. It's kind of a throwaway line. And both these guys are like big on, like, Hangman tweeted Happy Labor Day the other day. Hangman's talked shit about Jeff Bezos. Like, Hangman is legit borderline socialist, very online leftist kind of guy. And Punk is very old school punk kind of guy, right? So, like, calling out your cred on this, that's big, right? And Punk didn't say anything at the time, right? They had their match. Punk has the belt, blah, blah, blah. He comes out months later, Punk does, when Hangman isn't even there at the building. And he cuts an apparently unplanned promo against Hangman, who is not in the building. He says, if you want to come down here and apologize for what you said in public, do it right now. Hangman's music doesn't hit. Hangman looks like a huge coward. He's a good guy. He's supposed to come down and defend himself. He didn't, because he couldn't, because it was totally unfair cheap shot by Punk to do that.
Yeah.
And everyone's why the fuck is he so mad?
This is like waiting till somebody's like, hey, I'm going to the beach, won't have cell service, and then 2 hours later being like, meet me in Temecula, you coward.
Meet me in 5 minutes, you bitch. Yeah.
This is by the way, when Jason and I discuss wrestlers and say that, like, a guy does something really crappy and the announcers are like, what cunning! What a genius wrestler! This is definitely an example of that.
So, like, everyone's like, why is Punk so randomly mad at this dude he beat months ago, right? And it sort of trickles out that, like, he's mad about that specific line. Well, why? And then the rumor continues trickling that that guy Colt Cabana, that comedy wrestler that he had beef with a decade ago, that guy was a very, very minor bottom-rung underling at AEW. When Punk came in, Cabana just so happened to get kicked down to Ring of Honor, essentially AEW's minor league, no longer on AEW TV. So Cabana's pretty beloved backstage. Guys like Hangman apparently are like leaping to his defense against this superstar newcomer who's coming in and knocking everything over and talking shit. And it starts to be, you know, people start to remember, like, God, Punk was really an asshole like 10 years ago in WWE, and everybody was so happy he was gone, and he like lost all his friends, and like, he seems really nice now, but I don't know, maybe he's not. If even fucking Hangman Page is mad at you, maybe you're a legit asshole. And so at the most recent pay-per-view Sunday night during LSU-FSU, just to mention this is happening in football timeline.
Just to orient it in time, yes.
Probably, it's probably 26 hours before Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine. Punk beats Jon Moxley, who's kind of the straight shooting Stone Cold type of AEW, for the title. Just wins the title back outright. And then in the presser afterward, he sits down next to Tony Khan, son of the Jaguars owner, the boss of the company, who looks like 4 years old next to CM Punk.
He does look 4 years old.
Punk sits down, starts popping over sodas, not beers. He's straight edge sodas. And the first guy wants to talk about, I think, about a villain character who had returned after the match or whatever, just like storyline stuff. And Punk cuts him off, points out that the guy is a friend of Colt Cabana, this comedy wrestler from 10 years ago, and says, if you're a real journalist, you would have divulged that. And then spends most of 20 minutes talking shit about Colt Cabana's finances, calling him out for, like, sharing a bank account with his mother as if there's anything wrong with that. Calling out Hangman by name, accusing all the other big bosses of airing him out to the media, which might be true. They might have been talking shit about Punk to the media because they're jealous of him or whatever. And, like, yeah, that's scumbag shit if you're, you know, kind of the co-boss of a company. Punk has a point there. But he's also being a gigantic asshole about it because he's CM Punk. right or wrong, he will be an asshole about it. And he just goes on and on and on and on and on. It's 22 minutes of him airing gripes that the public either doesn't know about or is finding about right then and there or had thought he forgot about it. Oh, my God.
Choice cuts include telling everyone that there were 3 EVPs at the company. I believe executive vice producers. Is that at the company?
That's Bucks, Omega, and Page.
Right, right. The 3 guys who were working as EVPs at the company who he said, and I quote, could not manage a target. Now, I want to say that this is an
that's
asshole.
That's hard.
Yeah, that's target managers, y'all.
This is an asshole.
If you've been to a crummy Target,
Yeah.
You know the ones that have it on lockdown are doing a good fucking job.
And this is CM Punk, man of the fucking people, running down Target managers.
Exactly. Like, that to me is the shittiest part of it, that you would assume that running a Target was something that did not require a significant amount of skill.
I couldn't run a Target.
I couldn't. Just my Target part fire.
No, I'm out. So he's sitting there next to Tony Khan, who, again, I want to stress, is wildly overwhelmed. But he's sitting by arguably the greatest talker in pro wrestling history. This, I'm going to call him a kid. He's his boss. He's supposed to get him to shut the fuck up. He has no chance of doing this. Every time he utters anything, Punk throws up a hand and the guy like burr, burr, clams up, sweating, shuddering, eyes flashing around somebody, do something.
Throws like up he wants a hand fucking... like in his face?
No, just to the side dismissively.
Oh, okay.
There's That's literally a moment where Punk is rambling about how everyone should listen to him and he said, I'm trying to run a business here. He's not in charge. The guy next to him is in charge, and the wrestlers he's mad at are also in charge. Punk is just some guy who showed up claiming he's running the company, and the guy actually running the company is about to cry. So then, during this, a security guard goes running past. No one thinks anything of it.
It's Harry Styles. He's in the building.
The security guard might be going to see Harry Styles.
I'm so glad we're doing this. There's no way I could have held both these events in my head at one time.
Security guard is probably doing a whole lot of running around because it emerged this morning, 2 days later, that Punk and his trainer, a guy named Ace Steel, who had just emerged as an on-TV character, that the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega had gone into Punk's dressing room. An altercation started. There were fists thrown. There was a real life folding chair shot.
Somebody
hit a folding chair for real. It happens. They're dangerous. Wrestling has been trying to warn you for decades.
Oh my God.
I think it was one of the Young Bucks who got chaired.
Ace Steel, this detail is very important.
Ace Steel, this guy who just got landed an incredible gig. He's an on TV character with AEW a week ago. What is he doing 1 week in, according to reports? He bit, during this fight, bit Kenny fucking Omega.
No!
One of the world's biggest wrestling stars, the single guy, most arguably actually in charge of this company, like universally beloved. Five-star matches. He's got zillions of them.
The new trend is unexpected biting.
Bitten Quentin.
And this is Punk's like only continents.
Punk has like four friends in this company. And this is one of them. Who should be like mega turbo fired if this is true. Yeah. So, yes, Ryan, go ahead.
This is a complete digression. I'll make it quick. It occurred to me at the end of the LSU Florida State game that after neutral site games, we should have set up right outside one of the exits, a sort of cordoned off area that has like stage glass and breakaway furniture, and we should corral the losing fans into there and let them know, like, hey, this is all, there are cameras on, this is all televised, but go fucking ham. Like, hit each other with these stage bottles. Just go nuts.
It should be and. Like, people will see what you perform here.
Also, someone's bringing a real bottle in. You know that's going to happen.
Oh, it's LSU. Right? Yeah. 100%.
Also, it's a bouncy castle. It's a big bouncy castle.
Mm-hmm. Like y'all were saying about the movie drama, like the Marvelization, Ryan, where like movie PR things these days are so cryptid and safe and corporate. Well, like the knock against WWE for about 20 years after the time WCW, which was a fucking madhouse in the 90s. After WCW went away, WWE was one deeply strange person's extremely buttoned down in very strange ways vision. No one talked out a turn, unless they're CM Punk and then they disappear, right? Like, everyone ran every single syllable past Vince McMahon, no matter how stupid those syllables were once he translated them through his 80-year-old sense of humor. Yeah. It was top-down authoritarianism. But at a time like this, you can see.
Yeah.
There's a use for a little bit of that. Because, like, this shit would have never flown in WWE. If Triple H is in charge, he would have picked up CM Punk and thrown him for this shit.
We're talking about a Greg Sankey versus Mike Slive situation here.
Yes, exactly.
Emotionally.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so this is your old school movie PR run where, like, I'm pretty sure all of his hate is real.
So what is the context in which I think it's Punk goes on this rant about, like, I'm old and my back hurts and I got kids. What is that?
Yeah,
about?
I work
so
with
he's out of
kids.
Shape. Like, I mean, right. He's in good shape. He looks good. He can, you know, he can do the job or whatever. But compared to wrestlers, he is out of shape. If he were to try to wrestle Daniel Bryan,
he's like
be
what
40, crying in 5
45
minutes.
Or something, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's not fortified by cigarettes or anything, right? Like,
cigarettes and steroids have missed him, so he has to actually experience.
And
the
he's
pain.
Had a ton of injuries, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yes.
But like. He sort of likes to play up how hard he's working and all that. And, by children, he's griping about, like, you know, a 25-year-old wrestler
like MJF.
He means
his coworkers. He's not talking about, like, I am a father.
Not his actual kids. He likes his kids fine. As far as we know, his family is great. Like, his wife is a wrestler. She's very funny. She's cool. But, like, he's calling all of his coworkers children.
That's very different than what I thought he was saying.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yes, he does not literally employ his kids.
Yeah.
I hope. So, that's wrestling, where WWE, under a sophisticated corporate benevolent father figure, Triple H, is the safe, boring place to work, and AEW, the cool, fun meme company, is a fucking nightmare. Everything flipped in 1 month. It's awesome. Wow. It's awesome. And, like, I saw a tweet. I wish I could remember who posted it. It was like, folks, if you got into AEW because you're like, I like it when pro wrestlers love each other, sorry, but you have now entered professional wrestling where everyone hates each other and you have no idea what's real and it's all Machiavellian and they're going to talk about it in public, on the mic, in the ring, on TV. And try to make money off of it. This is the good shit.
So how can we solve both of these problems by crossing? Like, I think the obvious answer from
Harry Styles and CM Punk, you two just fight each other.
I think it's Harry Styles and CM Punk tag team match against Chris Pine and Hangman Page.
Yes,
I think that's
those are the corollaries here. Yes,
that's how we settle that.
And Florence Pugh is your Jade Cargill. She shows up, and everyone's like, "I don't give a fuck what the men are arguing about. This lady should be in charge."
I'm going to drop one more thing in the chat for visuals. Here is Florence Pugh walking into the press conference in Venice after Olivia Wilde said Florence wasn't going to be there because of scheduling conflicts. Here is how she made her entrance. Have you seen a less bothered human being in your life?
This account comes to us from Florence Pugh Media.
Mm-hmm.
I probably follow this account.
It's a fan account. It's a fan account, but look at this. Could you be less bothered if you took a pill to achieve it?
This is a pro wrestling entrance.
I'm
glad we came back around to this because I was thinking the whole time, we have entrances, we have bits, we have clicks and alliances.
Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what's real.
Nobody is really sure what's a
Nick
shoot
Kroll
or what's a
is
work.
There for some reason.
Nick Kroll.
Now there's a guy WCW would have put the belt on, Nick Kroll, for the LOLs.
Yeah.
Yeah, because David Arquette, I believe, at one point held the WCW crown in case it wasn't chaotic enough. As
AEW hasn't fallen to that level.
Oh,
yet.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. He held the title.
AEW or WCW gave their booker the title belt.
Yeah.
The guy in charge of deciding who gets the title belt. That's how bad. That's how far AEW can fall. If the son of the Jaguars owner gets the title belt, you know we have entered WCW zone.
Conference realignment looks relatively boring compared to all of this.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, by the time this episode drops, Lea Michele will have made her debut in Funny Girl. So I hope everybody took their vitamins over the weekend.
Replacing
we
Beanie
it.
Feldstein, who wasn't book smart.
Speaking of people who go off script.
Again, and guys, thank you for filling us in on that, because I could not possibly have absorbed that much information simultaneously, and I had to take it in concurrently. So for those of you who only lived through one or the other or neither of these because you were out having a human life, I hope that we have brought you some measure of closure today.
Your alternative is watching Georgia Tech lose to Clemson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All of this happened during a 4-day debut weekend of college football.
I would like to say one thing in praise of Georgia Tech.
Okay. They didn't give up many points for a while.
I will praise their D-line.
Yeah.
Jeff Collins' time management was highly questionable this game. Highly questionable
Did
this
you
game.
Have the sound on when the announcers were going to halftime?
Yes.
Have you ever heard a pair of booth personnel try harder not to shit talk somebody?
No. Mm-hmm.
Like, they were stunned.
Yes, yes. So the time management in this game was suspect.
He's supposed to be smart.
Here's the thing. Georgia Tech did the smart thing. And when you lose that badly, nobody's like, if only we had three timeouts, we wouldn't have lost.
I'm going to say this. I don't even think they lost that badly. I think it could have been a lot worse. Now, I think it could have been a lot worse because Clemson has not fixed their O-line, and DJ had a new center and who appeared to be going through some shit. And, y'all, I don't think we have quite – I have not seen anywhere in the media anyone pointing to – what I think is certainly the most Fulcastian, if not maybe the most important factor in the departure. But is this what happens when you lose Robbie Caldwell off your staff? Robbie Caldwell retired, and Clemson got pushed. Clemson got mauled for portions of this game by Georgia Tech's defensive front. Don't you think that's interesting?
The final score looks bad for Tech, but I thought the first half in particular, they looked downright good by their
standards.
They were
perky. Yeah.
Here's the bad news, I think. Watching this game, I was like, oh, this looks like a really good program in year two of a new coach. And
How many years
it has that it has that vibe where you're like, okay, they're starting to figure some shit out.
It's his first game.
I mean, don't you know, once he gets his guys in there.
I love that. Yeah, there's that, and then there's do we give any sort of that grace period to Brian Kelly? Fuck no.
No.
He should have had this shit turned around by now if he's who he says he is.
I know how Holly feels about this, and I know how Godfrey feels about this, and I will ask Spencer and Jason the same question. Would LSU have been better off, from a feelings perspective, just losing this game by 14?
Oh, we already had this conversation.
Yeah, I know where you and Godfrey stand on this.
I think they would have been better off losing it by 14. I think you'd always rather get your ass kicked than lose by one.
Okay.
I think if the rest of the schedule set up that like you're going to end up like 10-2 or whatever,
yeah.
Then like... okay, you want it close. You can build off this right?
We will feel good later on. This is a decisive moment, yeah.
I think where this really going to hurt is when you're 5-6 and you want that Music City Bowl bid, but unfortunately you didn't get those last 2 yards against FSU.
So I agree with Spencer, but for a different reason. And it's because of the dude that we all know Brian Kelly is. You know, It's your first game. It's been a weird couple of years for every team in the country. Nobody's going to remember week one by week 11. But this way, not only did he lose, I think it's actually worse. I don't mean worse. It's certainly better for us. Kelly didn't just lose. He was made to look silly.
Yeah.
And there is a particular kind of man, and most of these men are football coaches. Or most football coaches are this type of person for whom that is so much worse.
Yeah, this wasn't a situation where his players were simply not fast or strong enough. This was situations where the team made a lot of mistakes. And he cannot blame anyone for that. I know the impulse
Oh, he went into the presser and was like, I have to coach better, and I about dropped my teeth.
Yeah. He's, for he knows about he's 5 years now, he has, yes, he has very noticeably gotten tired of being called out for how, like, the record of him blaming players. He has very aggressively tried to overcorrect.
Which Let's sucks because this continues. Was a great situation in which he could have blamed his players at the end.
It's got to kill him.
It's got to hurt.
The most galling thing is, like, if you lose on a blocked kick, there are a few different ways you can do that. Like, the most powerful memory I have of this is Florida blocking a South Carolina kick, and that's the 2006 season, I want to say. Moss blocking
2006
that field
Jarvis goal. Moss, yeah. Spurrier coming back and almost beating us with Blake fucking Mitchell.
And this is that is the kind of block where you see a defender on special teams just, like, leap in the perfect synchronicity of ups and timing, where you're just like, you know what?
Yeah.
That just sucks. Like, sometimes that happens, and like, it doesn't usually happen that way. But the other version of this is what happened in this game, when it's like, oh, and Rich, I know Richard's written about it. I know Alex has talked about it, where it's like, oh, this you should have seen this coming. They were doing this to you already.
Yeah.
And
like,
is it,
it's It's not that? Like lucky you spun double zero on the roulette wheel. It's like, oh, man.
So LSU is constant special teams blunders in this game.
Yes.
Brian Kelly's handpicked, self-appointed, promoted number two is his special teams coach.
Brian Polian.
Brian Polian.
Hey, why does that name sound familiar?
Well, that's the son of Bill Polian.
I can't believe this didn't work out.
Yeah. Former, and he's also the former head coach in Nevada and former special teams coach at Notre Dame. Brian Polian's whole thing, by the way, is, you know, I've got this NFL pedigree. I have an attention to detail. I'm going to be able to connect you with people in
pedigree
the league.
Pedigree dogs are dumber is the thing that I think we forget. He's basically saying, I'm Ugga.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at now at the win projections on Massey for the rest of LSU's schedule. The number of games, 60% win probability for LSU or less, call them coin flip games. Mississippi State, Auburn, Tennessee, Florida, Ole Miss, Bama, Arkansas, Texas A&M. You could lose 8 games in addition to the one you have lost.
I really think I might go to the Auburn game.
I kind of want to.
I don't feel good about that choice.
No,
but
no.
I think I really might go to that.
It's like staring at the corn nuts in the gas station, and you're like, And you know,
sharing size.
You know, as you pick it up, that you're holding a bag of regret, but you're like, the smell.
It's not good, but it is enticing.
It's not good, but I want it.
How did you guys know what I ate at Quick Trip this morning? At like 5:45.
Again,
you
the
have
smell.
That vibe. You have that vibe.
Yeah. Just a corn nut kind of vibe.
You do have a corn nut vibe.
Lest we forget, I don't want to lose sight of it because it was several days ago at this point. That wasn't even the dumbest ending this weekend.
You don't think so?
I would put App State above it.
I disagree only because of like how we like the fact that it's a 99-yard drive after back-to-back fumbles. Where Florida State blew so many chances to win this. To just
I mean,
shut
they're
on
both
this.
Bad. They're both bad. Something about the symmetry of App State's just like puts a knife in my gut.
The weird circumstance where like Florida State was like review that. That was like okay, cool. Time out.
Hold on.
Also,
you know,
that was some Butch Jones.
We're moving
There's
a little
so
fast
much
here. I need a breather.
In this game. That would have been like the weirdest thing of an entire weekend by itself. There was the LSU's third down attempt to run in a touchdown, came up just short, and like as their fourth down attempt was going into the end zone, the ref said, hang on, we're going to review the review.
Yeah.
We don't give a shit about the review. You just walk into the end zone.
Yeah, the rare moment of agreeing with Brian Kelly where you go, yeah, that's like he's looking at the ref going, that's fucked up. You're like, man, listen, broken clock. It is right twice a day.
That was a jam-packed week one, though, in terms of just sheer stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It was a ridiculous amount of stuff. I also have to say, we did the show That Would Be Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network every Monday at 7
Honk.
p.m. Because I am a blatant SEC honk and shill. We had to do 14 games. Like normally somebody plays somebody else from the conference. So you can take one off the board and you're like, no, we have to note all of these games and figure out whether any of them mean anything.
You don't have to. There were several you didn't have to.
Yeah,
might not have said a whole lot about Mississippi State Memphis. Although kudos to Mississippi State
for winning game one. Yeah, that was a revenge game too.
Yeah, that is a revenge game, and Memphis is coming for your head. So congratulations to them. The baffling Mike Leach loss will have to wait until I don't know week 2, week 3.
What's their open their schedule? Let's see.
Yeah, hold on.
Let's pick it out.
Let's pick the baffling Mike Leach loss.
While you do that, I am looking at Bill C's new SP Plus ratings, where Bama is now so far ahead of the world, they would be favored over number 4 Michigan by 7.5 points. Number 4 Michigan.
You found somebody's got to go number 4. Game this week, I assume, is what the oh no was.
Oh no!
This is somehow more. Sorry, I was talking to. I meant Jason. This is somehow more comforting than his preseason, which had both Ole Miss and Tennessee in the top 10, and he couldn't figure out how to get them out.
The math must be wrong.
That was upsetting.
Only 15.5 over Tennessee.
So, I didn't have to look more than a week ahead.
Oh no!
Because we have noted this on the program before. but who agreed to play a Pac-12 road game against a program who showed a surprising amount of fight and pulse in a victory over Diego State just this week in week one. That's right. Mississippi State plays Arizona in Tucson.
Jesus, I forgot about that.
They play them in Tucson.
What's the time of that game?
That's correct. It kicks off at 11 p.m. Eastern.
Oh.
I will say, I think that's easier for 18 to 22-year-olds than the that feels like you're at 8 a.m.
It's the staff we're going to have to worry about.
Yeah, that's true. Mississippi State has a terrible, one of the most terrible stretches, I think, possible later in the year, too, where they play A&M, Arkansas, Kentucky, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia. That just sucks.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in other words, we could pick any of these. Oh, and by the way, just in case the cards aren't wild enough, their first conference game is against LSU! On the 17th!
That sounds fun for everyone.
That sounds fun for everyone. Is there anything else you want to take over from week one before we put it to bed?
I'm exhausted, but in a good way.
The 4-day week, I absolutely adore this weekend.
I mean, it's always I feel like this was the best week one in terms of giggles that we've had in a minute. Or maybe it just, I mean, it would hard to have a worse kickoff in the past two seasons, but this was festive.
Is that it?
That's a stupid ending.
No, I think that's good.
Server, you hear this audio? Just put something here.
Yeah, you can just put something right here if you want to.
Is there anything else?
Where do you think Server went?
He said, he had a thing.
Oh, okay.
He said he was leaving us on autopilot.
Yeah, he couldn't get out about. Oh, okay. Okay.
We should just talk until he gets back.
Come back, Server. He was watching cycling super hard. Super hard.
Relatable.
Yeah, that man is that man is passionate about cycling in like the way that I really only assume Belgians could be.
Have you guys seen how Sark is already underselling the Bama game?
No.
Go on.
He said something to the effect of like, you know, our goal this season is to play in the conference championship on December whatever. This really doesn't affect that. So.
Goals for the season.
I think honestly,
beating professional football team.
I think it's good to get out in front of like, yeah, man, losing doesn't matter here. Mm. Eat at Arby's. Hook 'em horns.
Oh, or was it where he did say hey, you know, culture can sometimes beat a superior team.
He did say
team.
That, yeah. That's gonna
and I was like,
off.
If you're talking about bacterial infections, yes.
If you're talking about Auburn, yeah.
Also, they have the culture.
So. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You're making the case that Alabama can beat the Jets.
Oh, yeah. Wait. I just have to put this out into the universe, speaking of the Jets.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
Jets and Bennett. That's it.
Yes. Yes. Hashtag it, Ryan. Just post it with that hashtag.
Oh, God.
Right,
it's there. Oh, you did it.
All caps, Jets.
Oh, you did it. You crazy son of a bitch.
Oh, my God.
You crazy son of a bitch. You did it.
I don't know. I think the guy looks pretty gutsy.
Oh.
I'm thinking about renewing my season tickets.
You can't teach that kind of poise.
Stetson Bennett, I think, might be savvy enough at this point that if he got drafted by the Jets, he'd just be like, nah, I'm going to go get my MBA. Fuck this.
I've been in Athens a long time, and I think I will keep it that way.
And if I'm going to run my empire of regional car dealerships, I have to start honing my managerial acumen now.